You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Boy, that was an ugly win last night, wasn't it? The Sacramento Kings beat the New York Knicks. They're back over 500. That's all that matters, except they didn't get any favors, of course. The Denver Nuggets lose by one to the San Antonio Spurs in San Antonio. The Los Angeles Clippers embarrass the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers are a dumpster fire led by LeBron James, so of course, Kings don't get any help from them. The only good news is that the Utah Jazz lost, so the Kings and the Clippers and the Spurs made up a little bit of ground on the sixth seed, but that's about all we can pull from the positives there. But Kings are back over 500. That's always a fun thing to say here in early March. Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Locked On Kings podcast. This is your daily hub for Sacramento Kings coverage each and every single weekday. If you're looking for game-by-game breakdowns, analysis, in-depth interviews with all the local and national experts, also highlights, player and coach audio, this is the place for you. This is the podcast for you. This is your daily hub for Sacramento Kings coverage. On today's show, going to be dominated by an interview today. It's been a long time since I've had Tim Maxwell from Sactown Royalty on, so we covered a lot of stuff in our long conversation today. Sit back, relax, and enjoy that. We will come back on the other side, but Tim and I discuss everything from the play of Harry Giles, the emergence of Marvin Bagley and his development this season, Willie Cauley-Stein's contract situation, De'Aaron Fox stepping up or not stepping up as a leader, the Kings' ultimate chances to make the postseason, thoughts about next summer, early thoughts about what the Kings should do in free agency and what their front office should do this next summer. We talk about it all. There is not a stone we left unturned in this interview, so I think you're really going to enjoy our conversation, our back and forth, and if you do, let us both know on social media. You'll hear Tim's Twitter handle and Twitter account. I'll put that out during the interview itself, but you can reach me on Twitter at MattGeorgeKHDK at any time. You can also email me at mgeorge@saclocalmedia.com. For now, though, enjoy my conversation with the Sactown baby giraffe from Sactown Royalty, Tim Maxwell. It's been a while since I've had my friend Tim Maxwell from Sactown Royalty on. You know him on social media as the Sactown Baby Giraffe. You can follow him on Twitter at TimMaxwell22. He's a fantastic follow. I highly recommend you follow him and everything that Sactown Royalty does, one of the fantastic blogs out there that does an excellent job covering the Kings. I've said it many times before. I think Sactown Royalty does a better job than any other sports site out there to bridge the gap between professional sports franchise and fan base. Sactown Royalty always has fantastic coverage of your Sacramento Kings, and it's been a wild ride for that website, as it's been a wild ride for us all throughout this fun and topsy-turvy Sacramento Kings season. The Kings won game over 500 here early on in March, about to take on the Boston Celtics tomorrow to try and make it two games over 500 and keep their playoff hopes alive, and I'm happy to be joined once again by the baby giraffe himself. It's Tim Maxwell joining me here on the Locked On Kings podcast. Tim, hope things are good in Arizona, my man. Welcome back. It's been a bit.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It has been a little while, but at least the playoff hopes are still alive, just like earlier in the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Usually our playoff hopes are done pretty much by the time we reach end of October, early November. But
exactly.
The fact that the Kings are playing meaningful games, regardless of the fact, Tim, and I know this is easy to say now when they're still in it, but regardless of if the Kings make it to the postseason or not, the fact that they're where they're at right now in early March, playing meaningful games against top teams in the East that have a massive impact on whether or not this team will make it to the postseason and end an over 12-year drought, that in itself is a monumental success for this franchise.
Oh, absolutely. The term I've been thinking in my head, in case we miss the playoffs, which is by no means guaranteed, is joyful disappointment, right?
Right.
We'll be disappointed that we missed the playoffs, but we'll be sure as heck happy that we got this far and we were in that competition when most of us expected, 26, 28 wins on the season.
And it's been certainly an adjustment of expectations, and it's been interesting. I know for me, I can't speak for you, that we've seen many fans undergo this transition, and it hasn't been smooth for many. The fact that the Kings became good and fans didn't necessarily know how to handle that and how to wade those waters, because it's been so long, and now that the players have put so much expectation upon themselves that they want to make the postseason, the coaching staff talks about it. It's clearly and very openly part of this team's goal this season, and we know those players and those coaches will be disappointed if the Kings miss out, but now the fans themselves are starting to put all their eggs in that basket. If you were to give any advice to fans for the remainder of the season, the remainder of this ride, if the Kings make it to the playoffs or not, how would you tell them to approach these final games and summarize, I guess, this season as a whole?
You gotta take joy in the fact that we are where we are when we never expected to be there. We never expected Fox to make this second year leap. I mean, if we're going to be honest, his rookie season wasn't all that impressive. There were flashes. You know, Buddy Hield looks like a top 10 shooting guard in the NBA. Marvin Bagley has been the probably third best rookie of the class behind just Luka and maybe Trae Young. He's been hot lately. So there are, and Harry Giles and his growth over the last few games. You've got the addition of Harrison Barnes and how he has really acclimated perfectly to the team. So you look at all of these pieces, and aside from maybe Barnes, these are all guys that are only going to grow. They're only in their third year or younger in the NBA. So one of our writers, Richard, wrote about building on a dynastic blueprint. And what he meant by that is this is exactly how the Warriors built that their team, through the draft, through some good late first-round, early second-round picks. And he was by no means saying we will become the Warriors. But the fact that the blueprint and the ability, the cap flexibility, a good young coach, those elements are all there and will still be there next year. So if we make the playoffs, let's celebrate that. If we miss the playoffs, let's celebrate the fact that we were in the race to begin with.
We had a back and forth during the and towards the end of the Los Angeles Clippers game where it became clear that it just wasn't the Kings' night. And I spoke yesterday on the podcast about some teams just have other teams' numbers. The Clippers have been just the bane of the Kings' existence so far this season. I was relatively disappointed with the fact that I thought the Kings played reasonably well, taking care of the business against the two best Clippers players, which happened to come off the bench in Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell, but they allowed players like Landry Shamet to beat them, a similar theme to when the Kings took on the Minnesota Timberwolves. Of course, Karl Anthony Towns was going to get his points and get his buckets, but Harrison Barnes did a good job limiting the production of Andrew Wiggins, and still the Timberwolves bench unit and other role players were able to have success against the Kings, which caused them to drop what I believe could be the most costly game this season if the Kings end up not making the playoffs. But Tim, you and I went back and forth during the Clippers game specifically, and you mentioned that you think the Clippers weren't the team to beat, or you thought the Clippers weren't the team to beat. You think it's the Spurs that are the team to try and catch and bump out of the playoff race. And I responded to you with a little bit of cynicism on my part with the fact that the Kings rooting against a team coached by a legend like Greg Popovich and featuring a star like LaMarcus Aldridge, that is not an easy task, to say the least. Do you still believe, after this Knicks win, the fact that the Spurs beat the Denver Nuggets just last night as well, that the Kings are hoping, or their best bet to steal a spot is from San Antonio?
I think so, just mathematically. Obviously, we know the Spurs, it's the Spurs. It's the Spurs, it's the Spurs. They seem to always make the playoffs, even in years where we question, oh, maybe this is the year they fall apart, they make the playoffs. And so one of the things, I run a playoff tracker for Sacktown Royalty where every day I update the important games and remaining schedules and strength of schedule and best case and worst case scenarios. There's all sorts of things. One of the things I put in there recently was an if-then chart. So if the Spurs and or Clippers finish with a certain record with the remaining games, this is what the Kings need to do. So the Kings own the tiebreaker over the Spurs, meaning if they end with the same record and they're both tied for the eighth seed, the Kings would get the eighth seed because they beat them head-to-head. If the Kings tie with the Clippers for the eighth seed, the Clippers would receive the eighth seed because the Clippers have, well, they've beaten us all four times this year, as you mentioned. So for us, we need to tie the Spurs or we need to finish ahead of the Clippers. And the Spurs have a worse record than the Clippers. So, for example, if the Spurs finish 10-7, they have 17 games remaining, we have to finish 14-5. If the Clippers finish 10-6, we have to finish 16-3. So mathematically, while the Clippers seem like the team to beat, maybe from just an outside viewpoint of the franchises, mathematically, the Spurs are really the only realistic team we're going to catch unless some sort of epic collapse from one of the 6, 7, 5 seeds occurs.
It's pretty safe to say that the Kings are going to need some help from either the Spurs, the Clippers, or whatever team is playing them. And so far, they haven't gotten much help. Like I mentioned, the Denver Nuggets losing by 1 to the Spurs last night. The Clippers absolutely embarrassing LeBron James and the Lakers, which has been a theme this season for a lot of teams, which at least is something for us to enjoy here in Sacramento. Even if the Kings miss the playoffs, the Lakers will, led by LeBron James as well, it seems like. So that's certainly good news. But in your mind, what is the magic number, you think, for the Kings to put themselves right on the cusp, if maybe a half a game out? What do you think is the magic number of wins to say this is what they need to reach to have their best chance?
I think 45 is the number I would always shoot for in the Western Conference. Some years it takes 42, 43. Some years it takes 47, 46, 47. 45 wins, that's right around where I foresee the Spurs finishing. I think the Clippers will finish a couple of games better than that. So if we can hit 45, we've got a shot if the Spurs mess up a little bit. And if not, I mean, heck, a 45-win season or a 44-win season after the projections for this year, I mean, that would be simply amazing.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, but it sounds like the vibe that I'm getting is gut feeling for you. You feel like, unfortunately, just the cards are too stacked against the Kings. They made their run. It was a fantastic year for them, but it's just too tough of a hill to climb for such a young team. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I transitioned to that boat really after the Wolves game. That was a key game, like you said, that if we had won that game or even the Bucks game, some sort of ground had been made up over the past week, but we've really stayed at that 2 to 4 game gap behind the Spurs and Clippers, and we haven't made up any ground. And now we, like you mentioned, we have the Celtics coming up. The Spurs' next game are the Hawks. So if they win against Atlanta and we lose to the Celtics tomorrow night, four games behind, with just a handful left, that's going to be a pretty tough hill to overcome.
Tim, you know, and I know many of your peers and fellow staff members at Sactown Realty understand how much of an optimist I am, how much optimism I take to my approach of following the Sacramento Kings. But I will be honest with you, one area that I've been rather disappointed this season, and I'm trying to check that disappointment and contain that disappointment and not assign too much responsibility to a player in just their second year. But to me, De'Aaron Fox hasn't done enough as the quote-unquote leader for this Kings team, the guy that everybody's saying the Kings are going to go as far as De'Aaron Fox takes them. Offensively, while I think his distribution has gotten significantly better, his scoring, especially in big moments when the Kings need a big basket, I think has taken a drop off from even his rookie year when he had a handful of big moments, the tip slam game winner in Miami, the game winner against the Philadelphia 76ers in Sacramento. Now, he is averaging 17 points per game this season, which is up from last year, but to me that feels like a quiet 17 points per game. He had an interview with James Hamm, and Hamm wrote an excellent piece about how he wants to be more aggressive and have more of an attacking mindset. But am I alone there, or do you feel like Fox has been lacking in those big moments and stepping up as the star that the Kings need if they're going to make it to the playoffs?
I think he's been quiet in moments, definitely. Like you said, his average is 17 points. I think it's right around 7, 8 assists a game, a couple of rebounds, almost 2 steals. So the averages are very impressive for a second-year guard, especially when we look at his rookie season and really the peaks and valleys he had there, which were mostly valleys. I do agree that there are times in which the Kings need a bucket, and instead of it's tough, you know, to criticize from our couch or from the media chairs or wherever we are. There's not that push there. There's not that let's just get down the court and score. We know the Kings base their game off of pace, and sometimes, especially in the third quarter, I find when the Kings tend to give up big runs, there's not a whole lot of activity there, and so part of me wonders if teams know that De'Aaron Fox is the guy to stop. So in those tight, close, big moments, you know, our team's mostly focusing on Fox, and that's why we've seen a Buddy Hield and a Bogdan and other guys get those opportunities late moments. That could be part of it, but I would certainly like to see Fox be a little bit more aggressive with his scoring because, like you said, he's really the engine for this offense.
I know you were very pro Luka Doncic at the draft, and you still are pro Luka Doncic to this day, because how could you not be? He's doing fantastic stuff, even though unfortunately he's surrounded by pretty much a dumpster fire and Dirk Nowitzki in Dallas. But Marvin Bagley has blossomed into a much better player than I think the majority of fans here in Sacramento and the majority of really NBA minds around the league thought that he would, at least in his first season. We knew that there was a lot of potential, a lot of raw talent, especially on the offensive end of the floor, but he hasn't nearly been as bad defensively as he was made out to be, and offensively we've seen significant growth from the California Classic to today. In your mind, Tim, what has been the most impressive part of Bagley's development this season, and what has your mindset or your idea of Bagley's ceiling, the best case scenario for Bagley, changed at all?
Answer the last part of your question first. Yes, his ceiling has changed my mind. Right before the season started, I wrote an article, and I don't remember the title, but it was basically how Marvin Bagley could be a cornerstone franchise player. And I looked at kind of his strengths, and if he grew in each one of these areas significantly, he could absolutely be a franchise player. And amazingly, he has basically done that over his rookie season. He's certainly not a franchise player at this point, but he's showing those heights. And in fact, some of myself and some of the other Sacktown Royalty guys were chatting the other day or texting or whatever on Twitter DM, and we were talking about who has the higher ceiling, Fox or Bagley. And about half of us picked Bagley and about half of us picked Fox. And that is a huge change from where we would have been at the beginning of the season, right? I think Fox could be the more impactful player just because point guard is going to be always the more important position than a power forward or a center. But Marvin Bagley, the most impressive part, although the most unexpected part to me has been his defensive acumen, the most impressive part has been his growth in games, right? So we look at the Golden State Warriors game, and Kevin Durant, he turned and faced Kevin Durant in three possessions, and three times Kevin Durant stole or blocked the ball, depending on how you look at the play. And on the fourth or fifth time through, instead of just holding the ball in front of Kevin Durant, Bagley ripped through and drew the foul. And that was incredibly impressive for me, from a 19-year-old kid to face Kevin Durant and say, okay, you got me the first three times. Yeah, that's kind of embarrassing. But the fourth time, I know what you're going to try to do, so I'm going to rip through and I'm going to draw the foul. So those in-game adjustments that we've seen from Bagley, as well as his just frankly per-minute production, when he plays, he scores and he rebounds. When he doesn't play, he doesn't score and he doesn't rebound. And that's incredibly impressive to me.
It's interesting you bring up the DM conversations that you're having with your colleagues, because we've had similar conversations underneath the arena during pre-game meals and post-game meals at the Golden 1 Center before Kings games, talking about, you know, has Marvin Bagley surpassed De'Aaron Fox in terms of potential franchise cornerstone? And I'm not going to name any names because I'll let them put it out in their own time, but there's some significant basketball minds here in Sacramento that have been around this team, covering this team for a long time, that do believe that Marvin Bagley could be the cornerstone star for this team going forward more than De'Aaron Fox. That's not taking anything away from Fox, but what they've seen from Bagley this season at just 19 years old, one of the consistent themes I hear in those conversations is that Bagley's 19. He still has no idea what he's doing yet. He's just playing on straight instinct and skill and God-given strength. So to imagine what he could be like when he hits his prime 3-4 years from now, based off the numbers that he's putting up this season, it's certainly very exciting. And as fun as Tim as it's been to watch him develop, because he's the number two overall pick, naturally he's going to draw a lot of attention and steal a lot of thunder, not just in Sacramento but nationally. But I've been really pleased and having a fantastic time this season watching the development and the emergence of Harry Giles. His issues and his struggles were clear from the get-go. Not to mention he was already fighting an uphill battle coming off of very significant injuries and returning only to playing in the best competition that the world has to offer in terms of basketball. But he had those foul troubles early on. He still gets into them from time to time, but he's done a better job of limiting them, allowing him to spend more time on the floor and giving us flashes of that passing ability, of his scoring ability. He scored 50 points off the bench over the last three games. I know you are a massive fan of Harry Giles, as am I. What have you seen from him that you like so much? And at what point are you ready to say, Harry Giles should be one of the either starters or a sixth or seventh man for this Kings team?
I would love to see Harry Giles start. I don't think it's going to happen this season. I don't think Willie Cauley-Stein is going to head to the bench. I think that would, in probably Dave Yeager's mind, I don't want to say anything that he hasn't said, but I would think he would think that might mess with his psyche a little bit too much. But, man, Harry can play. Harry can straight up play. And you've got Bagley, who's been better than Giles, right? I mean, better scorer, actually about a slightly better rebounder, a better shot blocker. Harry Giles can just play basketball. Over the last three games, you mentioned 50 points. That's come in 56 minutes. He's second on the team in assist percentage in that time, basically passing like a shooting guard as far as the number of assists he gets. His rebounding has been fantastic. And I think what everyone was impressed with in the Kings fandom world and the media world was in that in the game that Bagley got hurt, Giles was the first one on the floor to help him. He was the first one to walk him off the court. And then he came in that game and he was ready to go. And then you look at the game the other night when Corey Brewer got fouled hard, Harry Giles was the first one to step up and have a conversation with that other player. And so Harry's not only just a great basketball player, he seems to be, and from everything I've heard, a great teammate and a little bit of an enforcer, which this team has several very nice young men. And I like that Giles has a little bit of an edge to him as well.
Yeah, he was ejected last night for the elbow, which all in all was, I think, the right call. He maybe got a little bit carried away. But for the most part, I absolutely agree with you. I even tweeted out because he left after being ejected to firing up the crowd and making sure that he had one last impact on that game before heading to the locker room. And I just simply tweeted out that I think Harry Giles is going to be a badass for this team in the playoffs. As much as we in Sacramento and everybody outside of Golden State hates Draymond Green and what he brings to the Warriors, Draymond Green is so essential for the success of the Warriors in recent years because he is that enforcer. I'm not saying that Harry Giles is going to be Draymond Green, if whether in personality or in skill set, regardless. He's a completely different player. But to have a personality like that in your locker room and on the floor for you, especially if he's going to be a starter one day, getting big minutes, can only help this Kings team going forward.
Oh, absolutely. And Harry, I didn't agree with the ejection last night, but I'm also a Kings fan, so that's probably a little bit of just my fandom inserting itself there. But, I mean, Harry will take on anyone. He's not afraid to play. He's not afraid to battle. He's not afraid to get physical. And like you mentioned, Draymond Green is another comparison I've heard a lot. Again, like you said, not necessarily skill set, but just that glue guy, that edge, that defensive presence, that I'll get in your face, I'll bother you. That's something every team needs, and it sounds like Harry Giles is going to be able to provide that.
Well, as we're talking about the emergence of two great young big men, if they're going to get minutes and they're going to get starting spots, that means some people are going to need to fall off. And now, I think that Willie Cauley-Stein has been an unfair scapegoat for a lot of fans through the majority of the season. A lot of their criticisms against him have absolutely been warranted, and I'm not going to take that away at all. But I've spent more time this season defending Willie Cauley-Stein than I have been putting him down or being frustrated with him. Now, recently that has transferred more into frustration on my part because you need Willie to step up, especially with Marvin Bagley out with an injury right now and the fact that this Kings team is in a playoff race. And if Willie Cauley-Stein is unable to recognize that this is his money-making time, if he really wants to get paid playing and succeeding in big games, big moments, and helping lead a young team to the playoffs is the best way to make sure you have a lot of zeros coming your way come summertime. But it seems to me with this Kings team that the writing is on the wall, that the future is Giles, the future is Bagley, and Willie Cauley-Stein, best case scenario is the Kings re-sign him and bring him back, and he's a perennial bench guy, which I don't think he would be too fired up about. In your mind, I know you would be more than happy to see him walk away, but do you sense any kind of interest at all with the Kings to bring Willie back regardless of dollar amount?
I don't think Willie's gone 100%. Like you mentioned, Willie's looking for a payday. That doesn't mean he's getting a payday. There's a lot of money available this summer between many teams. There's about $600 million in cap space available this summer, but also about 48% of the league is available in free agency. So there's a lot of money, a lot of available players. That will work out very, very well for some players, and some players are going to find themselves with little to no money being offered their way this summer. As you mentioned, the frustration with Willie, it mostly stems, I would say, from myself. I won't speak for anyone else, because we know how good Willie is. Willie is a talented basketball player when he wants to be. The engagement and the focus just goes in and out too frequently to be able to gauge which Willie Cauley-Stein am I going to get tonight. Am I going to get the 4-point, 6-rebound, 4-foul guy, or am I going to get the 15-point, 10-rebound, 2-block defensive maniac that patrols the paint? I never know who I'm going to be that. So as far as the Kings go, I don't think it's sealed that he won't be back. I don't think the Kings would aggressively pursue matching any sort of offer. I would be surprised if he was brought back at more than $10 million a season. And Willie probably will earn more than that this offseason. And like you said, as far as bringing him off the bench, I don't think he would perform well in that role. I don't think the Kings would really enjoy him in that role. So I would guess, I would put good money if I was a betting man on Willie Cauley-Stein wearing a different uniform next year.
You and I are both cut from the same cloth. We love free agency. We love the trade deadline. We love the armchair GM aspect of the NBA, which is one of the reasons why I believe the NBA is the best league in all of professional sports on this planet. I would love to go into deeper detail about this summer and potential free agent targets for this Kings team. Maybe a little bit too premature for that, as we haven't even reached the playoffs of this year yet, so I'll save that for another time. But going back to the trade deadline, Kings acquired Harrison Barnes. That was the main acquisition they got alongside Alec Burks and Caleb Swanigan, but haven't really seen too much from them. And Harrison Barnes, for the most part, offensively has struggled, although he's transitioning back to a similar role that he had with the Warriors, very different from his primary scorer role that he had for 3 years with the Dallas Mavericks. But defensively, Tim, that's really where he's shined. And I know you are a numbers guy. You are a stats nerd. So you got all sorts of numbers to defend why Harrison Barnes has been so important for this Kings team. Could you share some of those with us if you have them available? And then on top of that, what do you think the Kings will do with him this summer? Do they try and extend him to multiple year contract, or do they just let him accept that player option and go from there?
So as far as his defense goes, like you said, he's been the catalyst of the Kings defense. So I believe, I don't have the first number memorized, but I looked it up earlier. I'm pretty confident in this number. They had the 21st ranked defensive rating, which is just a metric measuring the team's per 100 possessions rating. 21st ranked in the NBA prior to the trade deadline. So they weren't very good. They were well below average.
Right.
Since the trade deadline, they're fourth place. So to go from 21st to fourth, you look at the additions and subtractions. Well, Iman Shumpert left. Well, we know he was at least a decent defender, so it's not like his leaving created a better defensive team. And then you look at who's been the main addition, Harrison Barnes. The team is better defensively when he is on the court than when he's off. It doesn't really matter whether he's playing the three or the four spot. I would like him in that three spot a little bit more often, especially when Marvin Bagley returns. But he's just been absolutely fantastic. You look at that Miami Heat game, which was shortly after the trade deadline. I think the Heat scored 2 points over the final six or so minutes. And who was involved in almost every defensive possession? Harrison Barnes. And you mentioned his shooting. It'll come back up. He's a career 37% three-point shooter. On the season before he joined SAC, he was shooting 39% on 5 or 6 attempts per game. Last night, he put up 22-10. So I'm not worried about the offense, just like you. As far as free agency goes, I think the Kings will attempt to negotiate a lower annual salary, longer term deal. So a number I've thrown out a lot on Twitter is 4 years, $80 million. He has a player option of $25 million for the 2019-2020 season. So what this extension, whatever you want to call it, would essentially do is say, you give us $5 million back for the coming season, but we will give you $20 million annually for the next four. We'll see about a player or team option in that final year. I think that probably gets done. Barnes seems to really like this team. The Kings obviously need Barnes' services. If he doesn't, that $25 million player option, they can always re-sign him again the following year. But I do expect something to get done in July this year.
Final thing for you, Tim. This summer is going to be extremely important, regardless of if the Kings make the playoffs or not, but a lot of that has to do with making sure that you have an established core, an established identity here in Sacramento, and that begins and ends with your front office and your coaching staff. Head coach Dave Yeager going into the final year of his deal. So is general manager Vlade Divac, who's dealt with a lot of criticisms over his tenure as a Kings GM, but is starting to gain a lot of respect from not just Sacramento fans, but around the league as a GM that seems to understand what he is doing from here on out, which maybe allows him to spread his wings a little bit more and be the player personality nice guy that could help attract a name or two to potentially sign here in Sacramento and help take the team, this Kings team, to the next level. In your mind, how important is it this summer to get head coach Dave Yeager and Vlade Divac extended to send a clear message that this is the dynasty that the Kings are going forward with as a group all together for years to come?
It's vital. It's absolutely vital. We saw Dave Yeager walk away from his previous coaching position with the Memphis Grizzlies because of conflict with the front office, with ownership, and other things. And that was, frankly, an untenable position where ownership wanted him to wear a headset during games to give him directions. So he's not afraid to go find another job. And we know that jobs will be available this summer. We know Minnesota might have a coaching job, which he has a link there. And honestly, the Lakers are probably going to have an open coaching position as well. And I think every coach, well, maybe not every coach, but many coaches would love to coach LeBron James and maybe another star. So we need to lock up Dave Yeager. However, to do that, we need to lock up Vlade Divac. I don't believe, and this is not something I know for a fact, but I don't believe that it would make sense to allow Vlade Divac to extend Dave Yeager past his own contract. And I've had my own issues with the front office's moves in the past. I've criticized them when I think they needed to be criticized, but they've done pretty well the past year. Obviously, we see the young core looks really great. The Harrison Barnes trade was an absolute smashing success. Their free agent signings this summer, while maybe a little bit lucky to avoid one and get a couple others, ended up working out. And so at some point you have to say, is this luck or is this skill or is it a combination thereof? But whatever it is, it's working. So let's get Vlade signed maybe for another 3 years. Let's get Dave Yeager signed for another 3 years, and let's continue to move this core forward. There is a small part of me that has a small amount of fear that Vivek and the other owners look at something like the Warriors did, where they moved on from Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr and saw that jump, and they may look to do the same thing this summer. That is not something I've heard at all from any sources. That's just a personal fear of mine. So we need to lock those guys up as soon as the season ends.
Tim, I could not agree with you any more, but I think that's a great discussion to get into more detail about. We will revisit that and the free agency discussion later on, maybe at the end of the season, at least for the Sacramento Kings. Would love to have you back on, and we can go into more detail about the boxes that the Kings absolutely need to check this summer. And I think Vlade and Dave Yeager extensions are at the top of that list. Tim Maxwell, you can follow him on Twitter at TimMaxwell22. I highly encourage you to do so. He's the Sacktown Baby Giraffe. You can also read all of his fantastic work right now on SacktownRoyalty.com. And, of course, keep it tuned right into Locked On Kings. He's a frequent guest here. And you, if you've listened to this interview as a whole, you understand why. Tim, thank you so much for taking the time to appear on the podcast today. We'll have you back on very, very soon, I am sure. Enjoy the rest of the ride. It should be fun.
Thanks, Matt. Have a great night.
Huge thank you to Tim for taking the time here to come back on the Locked On Kings podcast. And like I said there at the end, once we get to the end of the season and start to transition into the offseason and transition into this summer, I'm definitely going to have Tim back on because we have a lot to talk about. We thought last summer was huge with the fact that the Kings had the number two pick in the draft. Well, this summer could be even bigger as now they have a young core together. They're on the cusp of the playoffs this year. Next season, we're going to be expecting them to actually make the playoffs. That means they're going to need to have a successful offseason, a successful summer to help add to their chances of that. And hopefully, if they don't break the playoff drought this season, they'll definitely be breaking the playoff drought in 2019-2020. That'll do it for today's Locked On On Kings podcast. Again, reach out to me at any time on Twitter at MattGeorgeKHDK. Any questions, comments that you have about the podcast, about the Kings, it's all fair game. You can also reach me via email, mgeorge@saclocalmedia.com. If you have a second to head over to the iTunes store and leave a review for this podcast, that would help us out a ton. It can be good, it can be bad. It does not matter. It helps us out overall. I read those. I take them to heart. I don't take the mean ones personally, but I make sure that I can learn something from them at least a little bit, because I am by means no way perfect, nor is this podcast perfect. We grow every single day, kind of like the Sacramento Kings do. Draw a little correlation there for you. But I will be back for tomorrow's podcast, as we'll talk about this Kings win over the New York Knicks a little bit more, and we'll preview the Kings and Boston Celtics in the Golden One Center tomorrow night. But until then, my name is Matt George. Thank you so much for listening to the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.